Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Fired Up, the hottest sports show in Central Ohio, the show where four sports fans talk sports for the fans. Our topics for this evening are a Los Angeles Rams Hall of Famers calling it quits. Get the moving trucks ready because NFL free agents are finding new homes. Juwan Howard relieved of his duties as the University of Michigan men's basketball coach. 67 games in 3 weeks. Let the madness begin. With that, I give you our assistant chief of our fire brigade, Colton Cow.
Thanks, Matt. We're here actually on a Wednesday night instead of a Thursday. Wanted to try to get some action in, talk a little bit of, you know, March Madness before the madness really does begin.
Yeah. We got our little bit of taste last night.
Right, yeah, absolutely. We got to taste a little bit of the NIT action here in our local hometown in Columbus. Cheering on the Ohio State Buckeyes to a victory over the Cornell Big Reds. You know, exciting game. You know, felt somewhat like a March Madness. Not quite the atmosphere or the amount of people, but right. Still, you know, on a lesser scale, felt like a March Madness type game. You know, great game between the two teams, but
playing for their lives.
Yeah, it was exciting to see, and something that we love. You know, we love our sports, so we got to take part in it. So it was exciting. You know, good game and exciting atmosphere to be a part of. But quickly, you know, a couple of topics before we get started. Like Matt mentioned at the beginning of the show, going to talk a little bit more NFL. You know, NFL news. Big major retirement here, obviously free agency or, the off season's kind of, what's been going on in the NFL here the last, week or so, but just as much as new signings and, people leaving teams and going to new teams and whatnot, there's, guys that, decide that it, they've had enough, in the NFL, calling it quits and, deciding to hang up the cleats and, walk off into the sunset. So first topic here then, a Rams legend, if you will. Obviously only 10 seasons under his belt in the NFL, but obviously a guy that is a first ballot Hall of Famer, defensive tackle Aaron Donald, officially deciding to retire from the NFL after 10 seasons. Matt, what's your thoughts on this, or what's some accolades you found, right, or some interesting stuff about Donald that stuck out to you?
Well, I mean, not only was a great NFL Hall of Fame type of career, he was also great in college. He won almost every defensive award there was to win there before he ended up going pro, and the guy just kept on playing, and
right.
Pretty cool that he stayed with the same Rams, team, the same franchise his entire career. There's right. Not a lot of guys doing that these days. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. He ended up playing 165 games, had 577 total tackles, 117 sacks, 186 tackles for loss. He was a three-time Defensive Player of the Year, a Super Bowl champion, Defensive Rookie of the Year, eight-time first-team All-Pro, 10-time Pro Bowler. I mean,
you name it, yeah, the guy's done it.
He's going to end up retiring third all-time in tackles mm-hmm. for loss, top 40 all-time in sacks. And he's just going to go down as one of the greatest defenders of all time in the game of football. Who had a great career. Mm-hmm. Hats off to the man.
Right, yeah. Obviously, this is, I don't know, a shock or, major surprise. I mean, this is a guy that, after they won the Super Bowl just a couple of seasons, he was talking about retirement. And that was, a couple of seasons ago. So a guy that was going to be playing less than double digit, didn't even play double digit seasons and was already thinking about retirement, but had accomplished pretty much everything you can accomplish right. In those short 7 to 8 seasons that he had in the NFL. So I don't think anybody would have really faulted him for it, because at that point, he accomplished pretty much everything you want to accomplish as a player, especially on the defensive side of the ball, but then also getting that elusive, Super Bowl under his belt as right. Well. But, decided to stay a couple more seasons. The Rams, at the time gave him the biggest contract of a non-QB in the NFL at the time. Came back for a couple of seasons, but, ultimately decided, enough was enough. Wear and tear on the body. And again, he accomplished so much, not just in the NFL, but college, like you mentioned, and a guy that, maybe not your prototypical kind of defensive tackle, kind of a shorter, kind of stockier guy, not your big, tall, wide body type guy, just a guy that's a physical specimen in his own. I mean, one thing that I found, which was astonishing to me and probably not all that surprising, but just to see the numbers, it really kind of stands out. So in the past five seasons, the average NFL kind of pass rush win rate, mm-hmm. against a single pass blocker, basically one-on-one, it's been roughly 17% has been the win rate for the defender. Donald, in that same span of five seasons, he's posted an 18% pass rush win rate against two defenders. So to put that in maybe layman's terms, right. The guy's doing better at getting to the quarterback against two guys than most guys are doing against one, which is just impressive to me. Stands out that, the guy is a monster. And again, not a big guy, not, maybe the fastest guy, but just a guy that is good at what he does. Right. I mean, he has the technique. He knows what it takes and, willing to put the time and the effort and the work in to get to hone his craft. You name it, as far as accolades go, on the defensive side of the ball, this guy is an absolute beast, no doubt. First ballot Hall of Famer. Yeah. Like you mentioned, with the three-time Defensive Player of the Year, only two other players have done that. Mm-hmm. Lawrence Taylor and J.J. Watt are the only two other players since they've started giving out that award back in 1971, the only other two players to do it. Obviously, Lawrence Taylor, a Hall of Famer, and J.J. Watt, more than likely, headed to the Hall of Fame as well. So, I envision Aaron Donald being right there with him. A guy that, again, short span in the NFL, but accomplished a ton in those short amount of seasons. I mean, you can compare him to the likes of, Barry Sanders, who also only played 10 seasons in the NFL, obviously didn't play on the same level or championship teams that, Aaron Donald did in his time, but a guy that, again, accomplished a lot in a short amount of time in the NFL. I think it was he's 32 or something like that when he's gonna retire. I mean, it's uncommon, not something that happens a lot. I mean,
I'm sure he'll find something around the game to keep doing.
Yeah, obviously, but it seems like it anymore, these guys, want some kind of life after football. Right. They have been putting their bodies on the line since they were old enough to hold a football. It's a grueling, long, exhausting, process. So at the end of the day, they want to have something left in the tank, to be able to enjoy retirement when they're all said and done.
It was interesting. I found out when doing a little more research about him. I didn't realize he had a brother that was in the league.
Okay.
Played for Akron and was kind of a journeyman in the league.
Okay.
Played around the league.
It was
both
that.
Their goals to be able to support their family because they grew up kind of poor.
Right, so exactly.
I'm sure they both accomplished that goal in their life and did what they set out to do.
Absolutely. And a guy that, in all 10 seasons, made the Pro Bowl all 10 seasons as well, one of only a handful of players to do that as well. He goes down with 111 sacks all time, second most by a primary defensive tackle, behind only John Randall, who had 137 and a half total sacks. As a defensive tackle. So again, a guy that, accomplished a ton, won a Super Bowl with the Rams, was a major, factor on that Rams defensive line ever since he got drafted by the LA Rams, 10 years ago. Just a force that's, nobody has been able to figure out how to stop at this point. Somebody you can always count on to get it. You need a sack. You need, a big play, in a crucial time. This guy, was able to do it. And, a hardworking mentality and a guy that just, kept his nose to the grind and, accomplished again, a ton in just a short amount of time in the NFL. Right, so hats off to him. We'll see what he decides to do in his life after football, but, definitely a guy that, the Rams will definitely miss on that defensive line, but I don't think we'll stay away from the game too long. Obviously won't be
playing, but, you know, on the sideline, in the booth, you know, something like that. I think there'll be something that, you know, he won't be able to stay away from football. I think this is a guy that, yeah, still loves the game, but just, you know, time for him to hang it up at this point. So, all right. Well, continuing on then with the NFL, like I mentioned, you know, we're in the, you know, kind of early off season, you know, period, kind of the new calendar year for the NFL. We talked about, you know, a few signings and, you know, trades and things like that last week, kind of, you know, some big ones that kind of got things kicked off. Mm-hmm. So obviously there's been players going here, going there, going everywhere. And so we're going to try to do our best to, you know, kind of recap that as best we can. But, you know, obviously there have been, guys going all over the place. So it's hard to really talk about every single free agent signing, but we're going to do our best to pick who we thought won free agency so far and who we thought, you know, has kind of not done their homework or maybe could have done a better job in the off season and maybe hurt themselves here. So we'll start with our big winners. Matt, who do you like big winners here so far through free agency?
I got myself a winning team and a winning player. I'll start with my winning team. And, you know, I think the Washington Commanders did a great job this free agents period. You know, they added defensive end Dorrance Armstrong, big pickup in running back Austin Eckler, guard Nick Allegretti, center Tyler Badaz, defensive end Colin Farrell, linebacker Bobby Wagner, another linebacker Frankie Louvu, and safety Jeremy Chin. Mm-hmm. And put all that together with their top three draft pick. Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're going to be bringing a quarterback into town to you know, take the reins of that team. And, mm-hmm. and you know, they've got the makings of a completely revamped team that's going to be ready to compete right away. So, you know, I think they made a lot of great moves and great job so far in free agency, and there's still time left. There's plenty of guys still out there.
Obviously,
still got cap space. So
still have the draft coming up here in, you know, a month or so. So, you know, that's still a part of what we consider NFL free agency as well. You know, the draft is just as important. You know, signing veterans is just as important as getting, you know, fresh bodies and new bodies. And obviously the Commanders going to be picking up towards the top. So they have their opportunity to get probably that franchise QB that they're looking for, that may be the missing piece to the puzzle at this point, but, you know, still some work to do, I think, for the Commanders. But definitely early on have made some good moves. Right.
And then for me, the winning player of this, not really a free agent, but, you know, affected by all the moving. And I think that's Justin Fields. Mm. The guy got traded from a bad situation in Chicago to a team that just hasn't had a lot of stability. You know, you don't always do things the right way. And then he got traded to the Pittsburgh Steelers, where they're the epitome of stability and doing things the proper way and playing as a team and doing everything you need to do to win. You know, they're perennial playoff contender, always in the thing. Mm-hmm. Now I realize he may go there and he may not even be the starter, but he's also got somebody pretty good to learn under too. And Russell Wilson, a guy who's had a great career himself. So, mm-hmm. I mean, those two, I think, are going to battle for the job. I think Pittsburgh's going to let them battle for the job.
Right.
I think he can learn a lot from that. So even if he doesn't win it, you know, you got to imagine how much longer is Russell Wilson really going to be in the thing too. You know, I think he can learn under him now and then could be the potential future there in Pittsburgh. I think it was great for Justin Fields.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, obviously Pittsburgh, not just getting Justin Fields and Russell Wilson, but, you know, added some other pieces to the team to improve themselves. So, you know, definitely, a team to watch out for, but definitely Justin Fields. I mean, it's always good to go from a team that doesn't want you to a team that does want you at this point. So, you know, to get out of Chicago, I'm sure is a breath of fresh air for Justin Fields, you know, an opportunity to get a fresh slate, you know, start over and, you know, go to a team where, you know, hopefully his talents are appreciated and, you know, gets the opportunity to showcase what he can do and, you know, also at the same time, learn from, you know, one of the better quarterbacks in the league in Russell Wilson. So, well, for me, you know, my big winning team, or, you know, I kind of had real tough, because I think there were a handful of teams really did well in the free agency. But I ultimately landed on the Houston Texans. And you know, they added a few pieces, but also then brought back a few pieces, you know, critical pieces from that team last year that by far exceeded expectations as far as, you know, they won the division. They made the playoffs. They won a playoff game, you know, had Baltimore somewhat on the ropes in the first half in that, you know, in the second playoff game. So, you know, for me, you know, something that sticks out is, you know, we talk about those expectations. We talk about teams that exceed those expectations. And sometimes you see those teams the following year kind of just kind of rest on their laurels and say, oh, man, look how good we did. I think we have the makeup to be, you know, we're okay. There's no
we're going to do it again with what we got.
And the Texans, in my opinion, didn't do that. They still, again, signed a couple of crucial pieces that were on that team last year, you know, re-signed them to deals, but then also went out and got some guys to also
potential upgrade,
you know, move up and really help them out in some spots that, you know, was maybe some areas of weakness last year. And, you know, those couple of pieces that they added to the mix from different teams, defensive end Danielle Hunter, a great guy that they can, you know, pair with their, you know, first round pick last year, and Will Anderson. So a nice kind of 1-2 punch on the defensive line from a pass rush standpoint. Then they went out and traded for running back Joe Mixon, you know, which maybe on the downward hill of his career, but still a guy that can contribute and do not just, you know, something in the running game, but can also get involved in the passing game as well. After they saw running back Devin Singletary leave in free agency, I think, you know, a guy in Joe Mixon that can slate in and fill that, you know, kind of void that Devin Singletary left. And then a couple of guys that they re-signed to the team that were a big, you know, big help to the team last year. Noah Brown, the wide receiver last year, who stepped up when all their wide receivers or all their, you know, players went down.
Right.
He really stepped up and, you know, showed that he, you know, is a good player for this Texans team and was a major target for, you know, for CJ Stroud. And then tight end Dalton Schultz as well was a big key in the development for CJ Stroud. You know, was targets that he, you know, found often. So to bring them back to keep CJ Stroud, you know, continuing to develop, I think was critical to his, you know, continued development team. You know, again, a guy that not only did this team exceed expectations, but again, a rookie QB that exceeded expectations as well.
Just keeping two guys that he's clearly comfortable with.
Absolutely.
They can kind of read each other.
He
knows where they're going to be at all times.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, to me, that, you know, was a good thing for this, you know, Texans team. They wanted to continue to get better. They spent money. They didn't just say, oh, you know, hey, we did really well. We made the playoffs. We won a playoff game.
Right.
Let's just, you know, keep doing what we do. They went out and spent some money and brought in some guys to continue to get better. But honestly, I kind of went back and forth because the Texans, you know, was a team. But then, I mean, I don't think we can not talk about the Philadelphia Eagles as well. You know, a team that went out and signed a handful of free agents that, you know, I think, again, a team that maybe by far did not exceed expectations, you know, fell way short of expectations last year. And they, you know, they took the initiative and blew it up and added to, you know, sometimes teams blow it up and they don't really rebuild on top of that. Right. They just kind of rebuild and say, all right, we're going to start over and we'll, you know, see you in a couple years type thing. The Eagles said, our championship window is closing quickly. Right. We gotta build it. We gotta blow it up and rebuild and rebuild quickly. And they went out and, you know, got some, you know, key guys at some key positions that you know was maybe some areas of weakness in their team last year. But we'll see how it all plays out. Again, you still got to play the games on Sundays and see how it all goes. Because by far the Eagles have never been short of talent, but putting it on the field and translating into wins has been kind of the roller coaster that they experienced last year.
They got to get some leadership to step up now after losing their you know, their center, their star defensive lineman there. Anchors on both sides of the ball.
Right. Gone their voice, those voices, in the locker room and everything. Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, who fills kind of those leadership roles and steps up in those gaps. But, and for, you know, every winner or everybody that's done well in free agency, we equally have to have somebody that's laid an egg and, you know, has just kind of, again, rested on their laurels and not really done much. Matt, who do you think, you know, didn't do much in free agency or still has some work to do?
You know, I picked the Carolina Panthers here. I mean, they've signed 11 players so far, but nothing big, no real big splashes. Yeah. I mean, a couple offensive linemen, but just nothing that screams, you know, we're going to turn the worst team in the NFL around to being a contender.
Right.
And you would think a team with the cap space that they have and, you know, they'd lost their first round draft pick to the trade last year. You know, to not have a first round draft pick, you have that cap space and you're not spending it. You're not bringing talent in or top tier talent.
Right.
I mean, maybe they just think they need so much that they're just going for volume, as opposed to
quantity
splashes,
over quality.
Nothing right now screams that this is a great, great bunch of signings for the Panthers. So, you know, the Panthers are my losing team. Losing player on the side of things. I think Jadeveon Clowney comes out as a loser this year. He signed a one-year deal last offseason to prove, you know, he still had it. He could do his thing. And what did he do? He tied his career high in sacks with 9.5 sacks last year.
Right.
And at this point, he's still one of the guys that are unsigned. Mm-hmm. Nobody's really offering him much of anything.
No.
You've had other pass rushers such as Chase Young come off the board. Mm-hmm. They signed elsewhere.
Yeah.
And Clowney's kind of being overlooked after he – you know,
he did well.
Made good on a make good deal, and he's nobody's thrown him the love.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, age is not on his side at this point. But you know, last year, obviously, still in his older years, and still had one of the best career high sacks, and you know, one of his best statistical seasons, even at the older age that he is. But yeah, this is a guy that you know has been on a handful of teams the last 5-6 seasons, been on kind of one-year deal with this team, one-year deal with this team, and has produced everywhere he's gone. It's crazy to me that no team has really signed him to
a couple of,
I mean, at this point in his career, I don't think he's getting, a five-year deal or anything like that. But it's crazy to me that he's produced on these one-year deals as many times as he has and hasn't gotten kind of a longer two-three-year deal with these teams. But yeah, I mean, you're always in the need of a pass rusher.
Right.
I mean, he may not have gotten signed early on in this free agency period.
Somebody's going to pick him up.
Somebody will pick him up because, again, you're always in need of somebody that you need a snack, you need a sack.
Right.
This is a guy that's going to do it. You know, get him on the defensive line. And Jadeveon Clowney has been one of the best in the business, especially in the last, again, towards the, tail end of his career, has really, done well on some of these kind of prove it kind of deals that he's been on with some of these teams. But yeah, I think a guy that he'll get picked up again.
Oh, absolutely.
How soon, we don't know, but
it's not the big money contract. He was hoping for after doing a prove it season.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, for me, and you talk about the Panthers, kind of the losing team there. I mean, you talk about, the Texans and continuing to develop CJ Stroud. I mean, in my opinion, they're doing no service or no justice to Bryce Young, who's coming off one of the worst seasons as an NFL quarterback, not just as a rookie, but as ever. Yeah. And you don't bring in any pieces or you don't bring anything to really help him out, per se, that you're not doing your rookie QB or, now second-year QB any justice by not, bringing in some weapons to make things happen. So yeah, we'll see what happens. At this point, is it really that the Panthers weren't able to sign guys, or is it just the Panthers are not an attractive place to go play at this point?
Right.
We know kind of the somewhat toxic environment of the owner of the coach can't even last a single season before he's on the ouster, whatever. So. It just maybe it's one of those things that, guys don't want to go play for, an environment like that, or, Carolina's just not an attractive place to go play at this point. But, you would think that the Panthers would have tried to do anything and everything they could, knowing that they, picked, Bryce Young with the number one pick last year and, had a pretty bad season. Let's get him some help here and try to turn things around. But, We'll see what happens. Obviously a long time before the season starts up. So anything's possible, and draft is coming up, and lots of picks there and whatnot. But not a good look for the Carolina Panthers. So for me, my losing team, Matt will probably not like this, but I got the Dallas Cowboys.
You're not wrong.
As my kind of big loser. you know, as far as signings go, when I looked at it, they had signed their long snapper and linebacker Eric Kendricks, who ironically was actually going to go to the 49ers right. and then kind of backed out of the deal and decided to go the Cowboys. So
that was a good pick.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I replaced Van Der Esch.
Right. But, yeah. Yeah. It's, okay. it's
what the guys just, they also let walk out the door.
Right. I mean. Exactly. You know, it's kind of funny or it's just ironic. Like if Eric Kendricks hadn't decided, you know what, I'm not going to go to the 49ers. I'm going to come to the Cowboys. Like the Cowboys really would have done nothing at this point. And yeah, have let quite a few guys go out the door, you know, Michael Gallup, Van Der Esch, you know, the running back Tony Pollard goes out the door. And
left tackle Tyron Smith.
Yeah, yeah. The, almost that whole offensive line that has been so dominant for this, you know, Cowboys team over the last, you know, decade or, you know, half a decade. Almost all of them are gone at this point. You know, so it is gonna be a totally revamped team. And obviously I think at the same time, the Cowboys are in no position to really go out and make major moves because of how strapped they are for right. cash. So I think they were a loser and a winner because they couldn't make moves because they didn't have the money to make the moves. Now we come into the draft season and we'll see what they do, you know, draft wise.
That is something they've excelled at.
Right.
Building their homegrown talent and actually making good draft picks to work out
right,
well.
Right, right. But, you know, a team that, has not been able to get over the hump, obviously, as far as the playoffs. And, you know, obviously it's whether the expectations are right or not, it's usually Super Bowl or bust for this Cowboys team. And, you know, obviously Dak signed a big deal. You know, we'll see what his future looks like in Dallas. You know, he's towards the end of that deal. And obviously see what happens there. And a guy that, you know, has done well from a statistical standpoint, right. but the playoff wins have not come and as a result.
But, so, you know, what makes it all even worse is before this offseason started, Jerry Jones said, you know, we're going all in this year. This is our last dance with what we got.
Right.
What the hell's all in?
Right, right, exactly.
Nothing.
Yeah, well, it's like
it's all out.
Yeah, all in with the team you had. Well, half the team you had just walked out the door. Right. So you can't be all in with the team you have when half of them left already and you didn't bring anybody to replace any of them. So, you know, as much as I think you're right, the Cowboys have done well draft pick wise, but can you really rely
on a
group of rookies to lead you to a Super Bowl?
Right.
I don't think that's the recipe for a Super Bowl, in my opinion. To me, the Cowboys have a lot of work to do in a division that I think got better. You know, like you said, the Commanders made some good moves. The Eagles continued to get better outside of maybe the Giants, you know.
But even they've made some good moves.
I mean,
the Barkley left.
Right, that's right.
Because they didn't want to spend the money there.
Right.
They were spending it elsewhere.
I think the Cowboys, probably took a step back or, you know, whatever in a division that's, you know, already super competitive. Right. You know, so it'll be interesting to see, what the Cowboys do here in a month or so with the draft picks that they do have. You know, but definitely I don't think the free agency period, how they wanted it to start to get things going here. But
they brought back Jordan Lewis too.
One Michigan man who has again been kind of up and down, you know, up and down for the Cowboys. And obviously you're always in the need for a corner just in today's NFL of a pass heavy league. You know, and it's tough to bring in a fresh corner sometimes into a new system. So signing a guy that's already been a part of the Cowboys system, you know, that probably helps. But a guy that
But I guess it doesn't matter that he's been a part of the system because they got a whole new defensive coordinator.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's gonna be interesting, you know, to see how this Cowboys team does, or what they do going forward in the next, you know, coming weeks. But at this point, they've been a real dud so far. And I mean, at this point, the big names are gone. I mean, gone. They're already signed. So it's.
I mean, maybe Jerry Jones talking about selling the team. This is his last dance.
I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But definitely, Cowboys fans have to be kind of scratching their heads or wondering, you know, what's going on there in Dallas and wondering what's coming up in this upcoming season.
So, you know, I mean, they weren't getting over the hump with what they had, so maybe they did need to blow it all up.
You never know. I mean, you never know unless you try at this point. So we'll see what happens.
But yeah, Cowboys fans, gotta be thinking, man, this is not what we thought was going to happen to start free agency. So, all right, well, that's enough, enough NFL talk. We're going to take a real quick commercial break. Stick with us. Going to get a little college basketball news right after the break.
This podcast is sponsored by Podbean. Podbean is the easiest way to create your own podcast. We use Podbean to host Fired Up. Download the free Podbean podcast app to start, record, and publish your very own podcast in minutes. Podbean provides everything you need to run your podcast, and you can record and publish episodes directly from the app on your phone. Download the free Podbean app today. That's P-O-D-B-E-A-N. Head on over to Podbean at www.podbean.com and use the code PODCAST21 for your first 30 days of podcast hosting for free. Check it out.
All right, and we're back. Thanks for sticking with us. Like I said, we're going to talk college basketball the rest of the way. Quickly before we talk March Madness, got a little bit of a highlight here. Maybe not a highlight, low light. Yeah. If you're a University of Michigan fan, you know, the legendary, you know, NBA college basketball player Juwan Howard, no longer the head coach at the University of Michigan, the men's basketball team, after 5 seasons. Just announced, you know, last week or the last couple of days that Michigan would be moving on from him as the head coach. A guy that, like I said, has been there the past five years and, you know, got off to somewhat of a promising start, mm-hmm. but has been a downward spiral the last couple of right. seasons for the boys in blue, maize and blue up there. Matt, what's your thoughts on this move here by the University of Michigan?
Yeah, I mean, it felt like it was time. I mean, mm-hmm. there's just a lot of inconsistencies going on. It's such a mixed bag for him. I mean, second year in, he went 23-5, mm-hmm. won the Big Ten.
Right.
We're thinking, man, this is going to be some great things for Michigan. Yeah, they're going to turn the corner to their national championship contender to this year, 8-24, one of the worst teams in college basketball, period.
Right.
The wheels fell off, and I don't really know what happened. I thought all the players loved him, but then a lot started transferring and leaving the program.
Right.
Just a lot of weird things going on inside of the program. I don't know if it's maybe he was too intense for him. I think a guy who played as much as he did in the NBA at a championship level, maybe he just had too much intensity. I don't know. I mean, that intensity even showed with. It's probably several worst case off the court incident, right?
Somewhat like, on the court, off the court issues.
Where, you know, they had the altercation with the Wisconsin assistant that cost him games in his season that year.
Right.
So I don't know. Maybe it was just his intensity that just didn't translate to these college kids.
Right.
Yeah, that's why a lot had left, and he was left a little thin. And you saw what that resulted this year. So I think it was time. I think they needed to go a different direction. We'll see what happens. We were talking about this yesterday, and you were saying how the former coach maybe
John
Beilein,
Juwan replaced, as the new head coach.
I think that was probably one of the worst career moves he ever made, leaving Michigan. And I'm sure they'd love to have him back.
Absolutely.
He's been successful everywhere he's been, other than his NBA stop. I think you couldn't go wrong if you went that direction.
Definitely got to put the feeler out there and see what happens. An older guy at this point, it seems like now in today's college basketball and college football world is that it's a young man's game. And I don't know if Michigan wants to go kind of the older route, because at this point, how many more seasons are you going to get out of him at this point? But like I said, kind of just off to a very promising start for Juwan Howard. And then, a quick decline, year one, Michigan went 19-1. And had they had the NCAA tournament, obviously that was year one, was the beginning of COVID when they canceled the NCAA tournament.
Right.
Michigan would have been in there with a 19-1 record. Mm-hmm. They would have been in the big dance. Year two, like you mentioned, they, have one of their best seasons they've had in, franchise history, get a number one seed. Look like they're going to, potentially win a national championship. They bow out in the Elite Eight, lose by 2 points to UCLA in the Elite Eight. But year three, despite having a
about 500 record, 19-15. They sneak into the NCAA tournament and make it to the Sweet 16. So again, somewhat, you know, not good from a record standpoint, but still were able to make a run in the NCAA tournament. Then we get into year four. They lost their last three games and were about 500 and missed out on the NCAA tournament. Then we all know what happened this year. Right. You know, went 8-24, won three games in the Big Ten. Win five games outside of the Big Ten. Right. So, I mean, not a ton of good non-conference wins either. It was trending in the wrong direction for this Michigan team. And somewhat, I won't say sad to say, but it was kind of an interesting thing that, you know, with Harbaugh being the football coach and then Juwan Howard being the basketball coach, it was like,
The Michigan men.
This is it. This is the pinnacle of Michigan sports at this point, because who better to have in those two positions than Juwan Howard for basketball and Harbaugh for football.
Right.
Now both of them are gone. So it's again another new era for Michigan, and obviously Michigan is one that's built on traditions and, you know, very somewhat stuck in their ways that they only hire people that have somewhat ties to the university. So of course, somehow, some way, you know, I think that will play a mix into who they do, hire after Juwan, or who they go after next. Somebody again that has some loyalties or some kind of tie to the university is usually how they go. But again, a lot of young guys out there from, you know, smaller mid-major schools that have made some splashes that are available, or that, you know, have the opportunity to go to a bigger program and see what they can do. But definitely, I think hurts the university, because I honestly believe that they thought they had found their guy in Juwan, guy that played at the University of Michigan, had so much success at the University of Michigan, went on to the NBA, played for almost 20 seasons, had success in the NBA, and, you know, was an assistant coach in the NBA, had a lot of success as an assistant coach, and the wheels fell off so quick.
If they want to stay on those lines, do they maybe give Jalen Rose a call?
It'd be interesting to see if they go after one of the other Fab Five, to add to the mix. I mean, do they go for somebody? Again, Juwan Howard prior to this had no prior head coaching experience. Right. Do they continue to go that route again? You know, if you go Jalen Rose, or you go Chris Webber, or you go, you know,
one of those, we know it won't be Webber,
right? but it's you know, do they go the route of somebody that has had no prior coaching experience up until this point? I don't see it happening, but again, anything is, you know, obviously possible. But definitely, I've never been one to know or known, you know, Jalen Rose to be interested. I mean, he's always been kind of an analyst, a guy that, you know, in the booth, and, you know, a guy that knows his stuff when it comes to basketball.
Right.
Obviously has had no, to my knowledge, any coaching experience, period. So it would be a totally kind of wild card at this point. Again, anything, you know, again, those strong ties to Michigan definitely
makes anything possible.
Yeah, makes it possible. So we'll see what Michigan decides to, what they decide to do. But going to be looking for a new head coach up there, up north, and we'll see what they decide, or who they decide to bring in to replace Juwan. All right, well, on to the best topic, our favorite topic. You know, the madness. Mm-hmm. The madness is here. We got things kicked off. You know, the first four games got kicked off yesterday. A couple of games again tonight, and then we finally have our final 64 teams that set the bracket. Things get crazy tomorrow. 12:15, and from 12:15 till you can't see straight, there's games being played. And so we're going to be talking about it a lot on the podcast over the next couple of weeks. Always a fun time for us here on the show. So we'll get things started. We talk about those first four teams that kind of made it in. You know, something that I did some research on, and probably people that, you know, are interested in this thing, is looking at kind of the last four teams that got into the bracket, and the first four teams that didn't make it would have been the next four that would have gotten in had there been, you know, four more spots to add to. So
last four teams that did make it in, we got Boise State, Colorado, Virginia, and Colorado State. Obviously, Colorado State and Virginia faced off against each other yesterday. Colorado State absolutely embarrassed Virginia.
You know, I still never understand that, too. They're last four to get in, but they're playing to be 10 seeds.
That
setup makes no sense to me.
I don't
really understand it.
Yeah. And then what the committee revealed as their first four teams that didn't make it in or would have been the next four to make it in were the Oklahoma Sooners, Seton Hall Pirates, the Indiana State Sycamores, and the Pittsburgh Panthers were the last, you know, last four teams that didn't make it in that would have been if there were four more spots available. So looking at it, you know, I think probably everybody's looking at it and saying, how the heck did Virginia get in? And to me, a team that I get it, their offense is horrible. They can't score the basketball,
but
you can't take away. They won 23 games.
In a tough conference.
Right. I mean, they found a way. I mean, yeah, as bad as their offense may be, they still found a way to win 23 games. Right. Now, granted, you look at who they did beat, they didn't beat a lot of good teams. Their quad one record was 2-7.
Right.
So they beat the teams they were supposed to beat and lost the teams that they were supposed to lose to. You know, probably the definition of a bubble team.
Right.
If I'm looking at it, if there's one team that you could have possibly swapped them out for, in my opinion, would have been the Indiana State Sycamores swap Virginia for Indiana State. Again, a team that won 28 games, made it all the way to their conference tournament final, and lost in a close game in that one. And
that's the hardest part, though, because a lot of those leagues – they get one.
Right. Yeah. And they get one.
It's
that's
their fault. They lost.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's tough. It's just tough to see a team that wins close to 30 games and is not in the tournament. And you look at Virginia that, again, 23 wins, you know, pretty decent, but no real good quality wins, if you will. But it
that's the hard part too.
Yeah.
There's no true criteria for these guys to select.
Right.
So it's shooting darts at a board.
I mean, there have been comments that have been made. Obviously, St. John's, another one, you know, Rick Pitino that was left out of the tournament. And, you know, even Tom Izzo, who is one of those bubble teams that made it in, Michigan State made it in, you know, made some recent comments that maybe it's too much data driven. You know, you look at these quad one things, you look at the net ranking that they use. You look at all these metrics per se.
Just watch them play.
Right, yeah. And
more eye test stuff.
Yeah, Tom Izzo was saying like – and the committee is made up of, I think it's 9 athletic directors and then 3 like conference commissioners. That's who makes up the committee who picks these teams. And again, they're using the metrics. And Tom Izzo openly admitted, I don't even know what this quad one stuff like even is. I can't even remember what's a quad one, what's a quad. He's like the net ranking. I don't even know what that means or how they even determine what my net ranking is or how that even works.
Well, a team like Ohio State, their net ranking was like 45.
Right.
So if net ranking means something, then they're one of the best 60 whatever teams.
Right. Exactly. And so his thought was like, put some former players, put some former coaches on these committees or on this committee, guys that have been in this moment or been in these, you know, situations to give a different perspective of just looking at the numbers, just looking at the data when most of the people don't even, you know, the teams don't realize even what those rankings determine or what those metrics are even telling them at this point.
How to use it.
Right. Exactly. So I think they just want, less metrics or less data and just more of, I won't say a feeling because I don't think that's probably it either.
Right.
It's not just like a gut feeling like, they should be in kind of thing. Like you gotta have a good mixture of both, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But I think overall the committee did a pretty nice job. I think the big one was Virginia, but again, justice was made because Virginia, they're out at this point. They would it have been better to have a different team in there? Would it have been more competitive? Possibly.
Right.
But again, I don't think you can take away from a Virginia team that just because on one side of the ball they are not good, you can't take away from what they do on the defensive end of the court at this point. But yeah, overall, I thought, you know, the committee did a pretty nice job as far as teams that got in, teams that didn't get in. And as a result, some of the teams that didn't get in then also decided to decline then the NIT invitation as well, which, you know, declines the overall competitiveness of that, or, you know, maybe the overall competition level in that as well. But, you know, we'll see what they do to kind of maybe try to help beef up the NIT or try to keep that somewhat relevant and, you know, keep the teams, again, that don't make the NCAA tournament, you know, how do we keep them relevant or keep them playing
at this point?
Right, exactly. Okay, well then, yeah, we're going to then, you know, kind of break down the different regions and kind of, you know, talk about each region here a little bit and just kind of our thoughts and, you know, initial thoughts here, you know, looking at the brackets and looking at the seedings and things like that. So we'll start in the East region, probably to nobody's big surprise there. The number one, the UConn Huskies, you know, the defending national champions, finished 31-3. So they're the one seed. Iowa State, the two seed, Illinois, the three seed, Auburn, the four in that one. So that's the top four teams in that bracket. Matt, is there anything that sticks out in this East region to you or any team that you got on upset alert, or what do you like about this?
I mean, it feels like a pretty easy path for UConn. Mm-hmm. I don't feel a lot of power in this side of things. Yeah. I mean, you got your Illinois as your three seed, and they're one of those teams that, when they're on, they look really good, but they've also had their down times. I mean, when you watch them play, like the Buckeyes in the Big Ten tournament, and they didn't look definitely invincible. Mm-hmm, so, you know, I don't think they're a real threat there. Iowa State, you've seen them kind of be up and down this year too. So
plays a very similar style to Virginia, where if they're not scoring, I mean, they have to really prevent the other team from scoring to really win games.
Right. So, you know, I don't see a lot of problems there for UConn. Kind of an interesting matchup. You look at the 10 seed and Drake going against Washington State. I think that could be an exciting matchup to watch.
Yeah, I think actually Drake is the favorite. Yeah, not a big one, but yeah, a team that if you're looking, you know, and 7-10 is always kind of that interesting upset, if you will. So definitely one to look at there.
Right, and then you know, I like the FAU Northwestern matchup. FAU's been fun to watch. Yep. Last year they made a nice run.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that'll be an exciting first round matchup as an 8-9.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think I somewhat took the opposite approach. You know, you say Connecticut's got somewhat of an easy walk in this one, but if you look at it, three of the four teams in this bracket made the Final Four last year. You got UConn, FAU, and San Diego State, and San Diego State made it to the national championship. And the interesting thing is, if Florida Atlantic wins, UConn wins their first game, they're matching up in the second round. So one of those four Final Four teams from last year is going home before the second weekend, before the first weekend is over. So for me, it's interesting. Now, again,
they're not the same team.
Yeah, they're not the same teams. You know, so I think UConn is probably the team that's the most consistent from year to year, from last year to this year. But yeah, it's interesting that, number one overall seed, and this is what they get, you know, this is the draw that they get. But you know, they get, again, a 1 versus 16. Again, we've only seen two upsets of 1 over 16, but, Stetson, you know, the team that they'll play in their first round, making their first NCAA appearance ever. And you know, what's their reward? You get to play the defending national champion. Right. So, you know, welcome to the NCAA tournament. Here you go. You get matched up against UConn. So we'll see. Obviously, again, not no upset on my on my bracket in that particular, you know, area.
But, and you know, looking, I mean, I'll just talk about it as a whole now.
Right.
None of these 16s look like they should give the ones a game.
Mm-hmm. I mean,
There's been times you could predict a 16 is going to give a game.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing it on any of these 16 against ones.
Yeah. But again, very interesting bracket. You know, Iowa State, who won the Big 12, Illinois, who won the Big 10, Auburn, who won the SEC. So again, a competitive bracket, in my opinion, you know, just because of all the teams that are in there.
Because just none of them feel like powers.
Right. I mean, obviously college basketball has changed significantly. March Madness has become even more madness because – In my opinion, on any given day, anybody can beat anybody. Yeah. I mean, yeah, the six, we talk about the 16 teams being weak, but again, on any given day, a 16 team could beat a number one because it's win or go home. Mm-hmm. It's win, you know, win now. If you have a bad game, a bad night,
right,
it could spell doom for you. So interesting bracket, you know, for these UConn Huskies. But you know, obviously the favorite to come out of this is this East region and, you know, make it to the Final Four and make it back to the national championship. And, you know, obviously the favorite to go back to back in this, you know, in this tournament. So, we'll then move over to the South region. So the top four seeds in here, we got Houston, the number one seed, Marquette, number two, number three, Kentucky, and then number four, Duke, to round out the top four in this region. Matt, any thoughts on this particular region? What do you think here?
Kind of surprising to see Duke clear down at a number four. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at their counterpart in North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
one game difference in their loss column, mm-hmm. and you got North Carolina, number one seed, and Duke's clear down at a number four, played similar competition, beat similar teams.
Right, right.
That didn't make a lot of sense to me, them being that low.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, you got Wisconsin at a number five, which I think is a little high for the Wisconsin team I've watched this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Haven't
been 12 losses,
impressed.
And they're a five seed. Yeah, yeah.
But I think it's going to be an exciting bracket.
Mm-hmm.
I think Marquette has a real chance to come out of this thing.
Yeah.
Them and Houston, I think, are the clear favorites to do it. I mean, I know they're the one and two, but just looking at even at the matchups, I think this could be pretty chalk coming out of here.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Obviously, a lot of blue blood teams, obviously, with Kentucky and Duke in this one. You know, Marquette, you know, a typical pretty decent, you know, basketball school as well. But you know, this region to me, you know, a couple of things that kind of stick out is you talk about guard play in this region. This is probably hands down the best region as far as guards go. You got Houston, who has Jamal Sheed, LJ Cryer. You got Marquette with Tyler Kolick, Cam Jones, and Stevie Mitchell. You got Kentucky with Reed Shepard, Rob Dillingham, and Antonio Reeves. And then you got, you know, let's not forget, then Duke as well has their own mix of guards that they can throw out there between Jeremy Roach, Tyrese Proctor, and Jared McCain. A lot of backcourt guard heavy play in this particular region. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if a couple of those teams match up. That will be the matchup that you'll be looking at is guard play, in my opinion.
What might be more important is a good solid big man to go with that guard
play,
because those guards might.
They might equal each other out.
So it could come down to a big man making a difference, which would bode well for Duke.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, with Filipowski, if he's able to play like he has, or you know, that we know he's capable of, it could be, you know, spell good things for a Duke team that has, a solid big man that can do quite a bit, you know, on both sides of the court. A bracket that, you know, I think there are a couple of interesting, you know, matchups. Obviously, Wisconsin as a five seed draws number 12, James Madison, who won not 30 games, 31 games on the season. I know, you know, kind of my early onset, you know, kind of analysis and kind of, you know, research. A lot of teams are picking this James Madison team to upset the Badgers in the first round.
Well, the same James Madison team upsetting a big
Michigan State,
top-ranked Ohio State team a couple years back.
Yeah, and beat Michigan State earlier this year. So, you know, definitely is not afraid or not afraid of the big moment, or, you know, has the opportunity to do, has beaten some good teams here as of recent. So, you know, a team that would, you know, then face, more than likely would face Duke in the next round, and would be interesting because it'd be the Dukes versus Duke. The James Madison Dukes would be taking on then Duke University. But then another interesting one that stands out to me is that 6-11 Texas Tech, North Carolina State. We saw what North Carolina State did in the ACC tournament. I mean, knocked off the likes of both Duke and North Carolina to win, you know, what was it, five games in 5 days or four games in 5 days to make it into the tournament. This wasn't a team that was even going to make the tournament at this point.
But they're hot.
And here they are. And again, it's not always – the best team, it's who's hot at the time, and there's probably nobody hotter right now than North Carolina State. Obviously, they've taken a week off or they've taken some days off, so, you know, will that hurt them?
Right.
We don't know, but, you know, obviously a team that comes into the tournament, one of the hottest teams. So Texas Tech got to look out there for a Wolfpack team that's playing well coming into the tournament. All right. Well, then moving over to the Midwest region, top four seeds, we got Purdue, number one seed, number two seed Tennessee, number three Creighton, and then number four the Kansas Jayhawks. Anything that stands out here for you, Matt? You think is Purdue on upset alert again for a 16 seed, or do they get back into it and make a deep run here?
I'm not gonna predict a deep run, but I do think they win the first round matchup. Right. I'm just not fully impressed with Purdue.
Yeah.
I mean they
always find a way to lose it. Yeah.
Yeah, they're real big on their big man, but come tournament time when these teams are running and gunning up and down the court,
he can't compete.
It gets tough. Right, so you know, I'm not sold that Purdue's gonna get to the Final Four by any stretch
here.
But, you know, my biggest surprise here was Gonzaga ended up being a five seed. Mm-hmm. This was a team just a couple weeks ago we had on our show talking about, are they even going to get in the tournament?
right, yeah.
Exactly. You know, we thought, well, you know, they went out, they got a good shot to be a low seed.
Right.
They're a five.
Right, exactly. I mean, yeah.
And then even more shocking is on the other side of the bracket in the West, which I know we're not there yet, their counterpart in St. Mary's got a also, six. Was it a six or were they five as well?
Five. Yeah, they're
five as well.
Right.
I mean, two teams from that conference that usually gets one in if they're lucky.
Right.
Got 2-5.
Right, yeah.
Very, very odd.
And St. Mary's was the better team
because
they beat Gonzaga in all of every – I think they split in the regular season, and then they beat them in the conference championship. So, yeah, definitely kind of interesting how the seeding worked there, that Gonzaga was the same seed as St. Mary's.
But, you know, looking at the draw for Gonzaga,
I actually kind of
like it for them.
Oh, yeah.
Because of what we talked about last night in Kansas, losing one of their primary 18-point points of game scorers.
Right.
You know, to injury, they just announced that the other day he will not play the entire tournament. So huge loss for Kansas, and the way Gonzaga can score the ball and you know their tournament success they've had, this sets up nicely for Gonzaga to make another nice run in the tournament.
Right,
and I could see Gonzaga then possibly knocking off Purdue.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got Gonzaga in the Elite Eight playing what either Tennessee or Creighton probably.
Right.
And anything could happen at that point. Yeah, so, I really like the draw there for Gonzaga, a team that we weren't even sure was going to make it in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned the Purdue thing because if you remember correctly, you know, a handful of years ago, a couple of seasons ago, Virginia, you know, was the first team ever to lose to a 16 seed in the first round. Well, what do they do the next year? They go on and win the national championship, you know. So the reason I ask, you know, can Purdue be – the next Virginia, where they lose to a 16 seed last year and win the national championship this year? I'm in agreement with you. I don't see it. I think they'll make a deeper run than, you know, losing. Obviously, you can't get any worse than losing in the first round. Right. But I think that they'll set themselves. I think they'll make at least a Sweet 16.
Yeah,
I can see that locking that in. Past that, I don't know. I can't. I just can't trust this Purdue team. It's a team that has a ton of success in the regular season. We've seen it not just with this team and last year's team, but Matt Painter's resume or whatever with Purdue.
Yeah,
it's been the same consistent thing. They've been
Robbie
great.
Hummel before Edie.
They've always been good regular season. They come tournament time, they blow it. They find a way to blow it. Yeah. So I think Sweet 16 for sure. Anything past that, I think, is a big question mark.
Crapshoot.
Right. And you talk about it, you know, Kansas, I think Kansas is on upset alert. Obviously, you know, Kevin McCullough not playing. Not only was he a big scorer, but a big rebounder, a big assist player. Kansas also dealing with injuries to Hunter Dickinson, a team that doesn't play a ton of players already, going up against a Samford team that will press you all game long.
Where are you out?
They'll run up and down the court all day long, and they play 10 to 12 guys. A team that's deep and that can press you, this spells disaster for a Kansas team, that is playing with a minimal amount of guys. And if they, you know, get in foul trouble, I mean, this is not looking good for a Kansas team that came in as the preseason number one team, the team to beat in all of college basketball. And here we are, you know, getting tournament time. Again, injuries play a part in it, and Kansas is one of the more banged up teams coming into this thing. And I think
I think you're right with Gonzaga. If Gonzaga can get past this first round, they have a tough game, you know, against the 30-win team in McNeese.
Right.
If they can get past them, I think they can make a run here. I think their toughest game right now is going to be this first round game against McNeese. They get past that, they can make could do some damage in this region. All right. Well, then moving over to the last region here, the West region, North Carolina, the last number one seed here, the fourth number one seed of all of them. Number two, the Arizona Wildcats, and then number three, Baylor, and number four, Alabama to roll out, you know, to finish out the top four in this West region.
Now, this to me, this feels like the toughest region, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, North Carolina, you got Michigan State, who's always a tough out, no matter what. Yep. So that North Carolina have to face that possibly in the second round. You got a St. Mary's team who's just been great this year, 26-7, filling that Gonzaga role of the past, you know, playing just like it.
Right.
Alabama, who's been up and down the court all year long, scoring points.
Yep.
A Baylor team who can shoot lights out.
Yep.
And then Arizona, just another great team all the way around.
Right.
A lot of really good teams in this bracket. Yeah. This to me looks like the toughest bracket.
Yeah. As far as number one seeds go, it was tough for me between the West and the East region, you know, kind of determining which number one seed kind of has the toughest path to a Final Four at this point. And yeah, I got to agree with you. It was between the East and the West for me determining, you know, I think in my opinion, kind of 1A, 1B in my opinion. But yeah, definitely North Carolina's got their hands full. Get no love, you know, they win their first game. Michigan State, you know, more than likely wins their first game.
Right.
You get, a tough matchup against Tom Izzo, who, no matter what team he has, what record he's got, the dude's going to make
it.
He's going to bring it all in March. So, yeah, definitely North Carolina's got their, you know, got their hands full. But, you know, in this region, not only is it, you know, pretty stacked with a lot of good teams, but you like teams that could score the basketball.
Yeah.
This is the region for you. I mean, North Carolina – top 25 in offensive efficiency, Arizona 8th in offensive efficiency, Baylor 6th in offensive efficiency. Then we get to the fourth seed, Alabama 2nd in offensive efficiency. Yeah. So again, I expect a lot of high scoring affairs in this game. Maybe not a lot of defense, but you know, some back and forth battles of, you know, trading bucket for bucket and, you know, what we're used to seeing when it comes March time. But you know, you talk about it. Yeah. Even the lower seeds in this region are playing well. St. Mary's, you know, the 5 seed, hasn't lost since December, has only one loss since December 23rd, and that was to Gonzaga.
Right.
In a close game. Charleston, the 14 or 13 seed in this region, hasn't lost a game since February 1st.
Man.
Colgate, 14 seed, has one loss since January 10th. Then we get to Nevada all the way down, you know, in the 10th, you know, the 10th seed.
Right.
They won their final 7 games of the regular season, unfortunately lost in the first round of their conference tournament. But again, a team that was playing super hot before they, you know, lost in their conference tournament. So again, another team that could, you know, make some waves, or, you know, a lower seed that could make some waves that is coming in playing good basketball. So definitely, you know, something to watch out for. Yeah, definitely a tough bracket. Could see, you know, could see some upsets early on, or, you know, a lot of higher seeds moving on in this in this region. But one other thing I did want to mention, that I don't know if anybody saw this, but the 15 seed Long Beach State, on March 11th. So we're talking literally, you know, 9 days ago, 10 days ago, announced that they were firing their head coach after 17 years, but they said he could stay on through their conference tournament till the end of the season. Basically, what do they do? 5 days later, they win their conference tournament. They got into the, you know, they were the conference tournament. They were like the fourth seed out of, you know, only like 6 teams. They were like 4 out of 6 and go on, win 5 games in 5 days, or, you know, 4 games in 5 days, win the championship, and now they're in the championship.
So what do you think of conference championships deciding a team to get? I think the season matters more. I'm not even sure I like these automatic qualifiers for conference championships.
And I think this is probably a topic that we can talk about on a later show, but I saw something where now the NCAA or the, you know, March Madness is looking to expand March Madness. They're now looking to go to 72 or 76 teams. So again, maybe that would maybe answer your question of
the conference tournament still means something, but now you're getting more teams that, yeah, if you do have one hiccup,
right,
you still have a good chance.
Especially for these smaller leagues. Right. Like, yes. To me, all season should matter more than a possible hiccup in a conference championship.
Yeah, yeah. I think the conference tournaments hurt these small teams more than it helps. The big schools, obviously, they play enough tough opponents throughout the season that, okay, they have a hiccup in the conference tournament. It may or may not determine what happens as far as NCAA. Right. It really just determines seeding for them, in my opinion. But yeah, you're right. The conference tournaments for these small schools, it does. It kills them. Right. And whether you like it or not, it's almost like a March Madness before it's March Madness for these small schools. And unfortunately,
it's a money grab is all it is.
Right,
And I mean, the women just brought it up, Caitlin Clark in Iowa, about that was three games in almost 48 hours they had to play to win a women's Big Ten championship.
And
they're like, how taxing that is on these kids and all
And now
that.
You got to turn around and do it in the NCAA tournament. Yeah. So it definitely, long. The March is the longest part of the season, because you're playing so many games back to back to back that, it may be similar to kind of the NBA format in the sense that, like, teams, I wouldn't say sandbag, but, do enough to just get in the tournament and have fresh legs and be ready to go tournament time, because that's when it matters, obviously. Right. And the same can be said for the NBA playoffs.
But that's almost too hard to do it's somebody's opinion.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a little bit tougher, obviously. Yeah. There's no committee in NBA playoffs. Right. It's the best teams make it, best teams record-wise make it, and that's who makes it type deal. But it is interesting. But, yeah, going back to the Long Beach State thing, it's interesting. And they've announced that what happens in the NCAA tournament, he will not be back, even if they
win it all.
I mean, I think it'd be the sign of the apocalypse if we see Long Beach State win the national championship, but that would be baffling to me. But yeah, they've already announced, or there was rumors or whatever, that he wouldn't be back no matter, just because they made the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
No matter what happens in this NCAA tournament, will not be back as the head coach for Long Beach State next year. But kind of an interesting thing to, let me stick it to my former employer.
Right.
You're going to let me go. I'm going to win it all here. Yeah. So, good for him. But just an interesting story I found about, one of the teams in this particular region. So, all right. Well, that's going to do it for our show tonight. Thanks for listening to Fired Up with your hosts, Colton Cow,
Matt Cordes.
We hope you enjoyed our episode this week. And, if you want to hear other topics for future episodes, or, you just got a burning sports question you want to hear us talk about on the show, do feel free to reach out to us on our different social medias. We do have an Instagram if you search for Fired Up_podcast, or you can find us over on Facebook if you search for Fired Up, Sports Podcast. And also, we're down to less than 24 hours, about 12 hours, 14, 15 hours before the first game starts for March Madness.
So brackets filled out.
Yeah, there's still time to get in our group. So, get on our social medias. You can find all the information, the link of how to get signed up, where to go to get signed up. We've got, close to, 30, 40 entries so far in our bracket challenge. Free to enter, so again, anybody can join. Yeah. You don't have to know a thing about basketball. Pick your favorite color. Pick your favorite mascot. I don't care. Yeah. Do whatever you got to do.
Top two or three will win a small prize.
Yep. Pick up, top three will get a prize. So we, get in the mix and, have some fun in March. So, but also you can head over to our website at firedup1.podbean.com, where you can find all of our past episodes, just a little bit of information about the show. You can find this episode and all of our past episodes on pretty much any podcast platform you can think of: Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora. So all the big players, you can find our show. So appreciate y'all listening. And as always,
stay fired up.